Welcome to The Credit Connection with High Tech Lending's David Brown, helping you get your finances in order and get you the credit you deserve. Now, from High Tech Lending, David Brown.
Welcome to our show, The Credit Connection. I'm your host, David Brown, with High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. At The Credit Connection, we want to connect you to the credit you want and deserve for your home, business, and personal use. Here we discuss all things creditworthy, such as lenders, FICO scores, interest rates, credit cards, factoring, and more. We really enjoy your feedback and questions that relate to credit. I encourage you to ask questions through our website at reloans.com. Hit the Contact Us tab and leave us your question or comment. You can also call us at 805-686-2321. Today's program, we will answer questions submitted from last week's show and pull back the curtain about being a lender to a friend, family member, or stranger, and how you can make a wealth of money by being a lender. Let's get started. We had some great questions from the show last week and some comments that we want to share with you regarding payday loans and buying property with zero down payment. Don went to reloans.com and left the following question. I'm not 62 years old, and I was told that any withdrawal from my retirement would cause a penalty. Is this true? It is true. You will get a penalty if you do not replace the funds within 60 days. So you can get a interest-free loan from your IRA or retirement plan, regardless of your age, if you replace those funds within 60 days. So you have a 60-day grace period, replace those same amount of funds. So it's more economical than going to a payday loan if the cash is there. Just go to your administrator for the IRA or 401k, withdraw what you need, and replace it within 60 days. If I ran the numbers, I suspect that even if you had a penalty or a penalty was incurred, it would still be cheaper than your payday loan. Thanks, Don. Great question. Helen called in and left the following question on her voicemail. How is it that these payday lenders and pawn shops can charge such high rates? Well, Helen, believe it or not, these are within regulated allowances within the state of California. Each state regulates this type of lending and the maximum fees and rates the vendors can charge. We cannot charge these fees, and we are not, because we're not licensed as a lender. So they have regulations that they have to follow. So do we as an individual lender. I couldn't charge you these same amounts because of usury laws within the state of California. But they do have the ability to charge those amounts for fees and interest rates by virtue of their regulations and their licensing in California. Hope that helps. Last week, we promised you a story about a real-life zero-money-down purchase I made some time ago. A past client of mine was telling me that he was thinking of selling his property as he was getting older and did not want to do the management or maintenance of this apartment building. He owned the property free and clear and would be paying a huge capital gains tax at the same time if he sold it. So he was pondering as to what he could do and what would be the best for he and his estate. When he shared with me the asking price, I thought to myself, he'd be managing this property for several more years at that price. But then I remembered the old saying, your price and my terms. I basically shared with him some ideas, introduced the concepts to you guys here today of present value of money. We can all agree that $100 today is worth more than $100 10 years from now. The same is true with any annuity. How many of you have when you get a lottery ticket and the prize winning is $10 million, if you were to win, you'd have the choice of taking it over time or cash. Well, if you take it over time, you'll get paid out $10 million over the next 20 years or whatever their term is. Or you could cash it in for cash up front, but you probably only get about $5 million or 50% haircut on the total value. Well, that is the present value of money. Rather than having $10 million over the next 20 years, you can get $5 million today. And that's the concept I want you to be aware of. Anyway, with this seller, I was negotiating with him and saying that, okay, what is your true motivation? And get to know what that he wants to achieve. We continued, and he wanted to have retirement income. He liked the income from the building and the property, but the property management and the maintenance work required to keep it up was not what he enjoyed, obviously. He wanted to get rid of the property management, but he liked the income. So I educated him about the different types of institutional financing available for the property. Property was built in probably in the 1950s. It was on post and pier foundation, all little bungalows in downtown Santa Barbara. There's no way that there was going to any institution was going to make a loan on this property for several reasons. The first of which is that there was zero parking on the property. All the parking for 12 units were off-site or on the street. That and the fact that the post and pier foundation makes it more challenging if you have an earthquake situation because there's no slab or anything else and settling and the like. So just by virtue of the construction type and the lack of parking would make it unfinanceable for a bank. And then with regards to his capital gains problem, I tried to educate him on that too. There was a thought that maybe we could do a charitable remainder trust or an installment sale. Well, the installment sale seemed to work best because you're only taxed on the gain you receive for that year. You're not taxed on all of it. So he was going to have a significant gain, but he could pay it as he received it, putting him in a much lower bracket and allowing him to keep more. So anyway, he also told me that if he carried back the money on it, his target rate that he would like to give or to average on his mortgage would be a 6%. Knowing that, we were able to negotiate a mortgage that started at around 3% for 2 years, then it would move to 3.5% for 2 years, and so on until the rate hit 7%. This would give him his 6% average over the life of that loan. Other feature of the loan was the fact that it was assumable to a new buyer as part of my own exit strategy. I wanted to know that, like I said, we couldn't achieve institutional financing on the property. So if I ever wanted to sell, I had to have that mortgage be assumable to the next person. So I wanted to make sure that that was done. So when it was all said and done, we found out that I could have this note. It would cash flow by virtue of the rents. Of course, rents would have to go up a slight amount each year so I could continue to afford the higher interest rate. But that was very doable because the rents were somewhat below market to start with. And so we ended up closing the transaction. We agreed to a price of $1.2 million. But the present value of the property was approximately $725,000. What that means is that over the next 20 years, that $1.2 million loan that I was paying them in payments, today's value is worth about $725,000, which was about the cash value of the property anyway. So that worked out just fine. We entered into the escrow, prepared the new mortgage note and terms. We signed estoppel certificates for each tenant. And then a estoppel certificate, for those of you, basically it's the tenant telling the buyer that indeed my rent is so much a month and the landlord is holding so much of a deposit. So it's a confirmation of that information. So when it was all said and done, though, and we closed escrow, I actually walked away with from the closing table with $20,000 in my pocket, which represented first month's rent and deposits from all the tenants because we closed at the very first of the month. So it can be done. I don't recommend that you challenge everybody to a zero down payment, but it worked out really well in my case. If you happen to have a question or scenario you'd like us to respond to, just go to reloans.com and click on the Contact Us tab, or give us a call at 805-686-2321, and we'll get back to you with your questions or comments. Okay, on with today's show. Show me the money, or as in our case, the credit. Let's go to the heart of today's program and pull back the curtain on becoming a lender or bank. This means investing your own funds for a loan. There are many people and individuals who have made and trade loans to others that have made millions in doing so. I know a lot of private lenders that have done very, very well for themselves and for their clients. I'm going to give you the first rule of lending, though. The first rule of lending to a family member or a good friend is to never lend them more than what you're willing or prepared to give them. Why is that? Well, let's say that you lend your brother-in-law $10,000, and he can't pay you back. What are you going to do? Are you not going to go to the Thanksgiving because he and his wife will be there, or other reasons? So if you're not prepared to give him the money, don't lend it to him. And that's probably true for anybody that's family, because that can get really messed up. Yeah, let's say you gave him a $10,000 second trust deed. Are you prepared to foreclose on your sister? These are questions you have to ask yourself. And I found that if you're not prepared to lend more than you can give them, you'll be all right if you follow that tenet. Document all your data and conclusions. What I'm saying here is that the other old saying that figures don't lie, but liars figure. Check everything out. Treat each loan as if you were required to show up and share this same information with a judge next week, because that week may just come. All right. You want to make sure that your files and all your comments, and you've noted it very well, just in case you do have a collection issue. Take notes, copious notes from the very start, and have that timeline. We're going to take a short break right now, and we'll be back to continue our conversation pertaining to lending your own money and your options for that.
Mom, are you okay?
Honey, I'm fine. Just a broken glass.
Really? Are you okay?
I haven't been sleeping well since Dad, you know. I wake up at night worried if I can make ends meet.
Mom, why don't we look into a reverse mortgage? Then you won't have to make any more house payments and you can live comfortably.
Should I just call the guys on TV?
No, who knows where they're from? My neighbor recommended David Brown of American Senior. He'll come to the house and answer all our questions. Mom, call David at American Senior, okay? Here, I Googled the number, 686-2321.
686-2321.
All homeowners over 62, don't worry about your finances. Call 686-2321. 686-2321. Get a reverse mortgage with David Brown of American Senior. David Brown of American Senior, a division of high-tech lending licensed by the Department of Oversight under California Law Mortgage and Lending Act, NMLS 7147, CA 34130937.
Welcome to the second part of our show, The Credit Connection. If you were just now joining us, we were discussing how to become wealthy as a lender. Previous shows, I've showed you how to borrow money. Now I'm going to show you how to lend money. First, follow the six C's of credit. What are the six C's of credit? Well, credit itself. What are their past histories? How have they paid? Getting a credit report. How do you do that? Well, you would go ahead and get a credit report. You'd inquire about past credit that they've had, and get whatever history you have on their credit and past credit that they've incurred. Next C, number two, is capacity. Can they afford to make the new payments to you? Is their total income less existing debts? Is a co-borrower going to be needed? Here you're evaluating. Okay, your new payment to them, or their new payment to you, is going to be $400 a month. Can they afford that? Will that modify their lifestyle or anything else that goes on? What do they have to do to get that much more? Our third C is collateral, if it's secured. Now, there are unsecured loans, but if there is collateral, here's what you want to know. Is there sufficient value above the debt to protect your loan? So that's the whole reason to have collaterals, to protect that loan with an asset of some kind. And what kind of assets are you considering? Well, you can collateralize your debt with a mortgage, a pink slip, a UCC-1 statement. Remember, whatever they have that may be liquidated, and keep in mind your liquidation price is going to be, you know, what can I sell it for in the next 5 to 10 days? Not necessarily what could I market it for over the next 12 months. And that's what your collateral should do. Protect the loan as just that. If they don't pay you back, you take title to that collateral and sell it for any and all you can to repay or finish the debt. So that's a very important feature on a collateralized loan. What is the loan to value? Does it cover what you need? you might even have what's called cross-collateralization. So a person might say, hey, I've got this land that I own out in Palm Springs, and it's worth $100,000. Well, maybe it is and maybe it's not. You're not going to go out to Palm Springs to figure it out. You might ask them, says, what else do you have? So it might be a second trust deed on their house. It might be a pink slip to their car. Something you have a better idea as to the value. Anyway, that's a cross-collateralization opportunity. The fourth C is conditions. What is the loan intended for? Are you purchasing an asset? Is it for working capital? Will it generate the end result? So, for example, it might be for somebody's investment. It might be that they're starting a new business and they want to borrow some additional money. Will that money help them achieve that goal? Or is it just going down a rat hole and nothing's going to become of it? You have to be concerned and what are the conditions and what is it for? How will that capital be applied? The fifth C is capital itself. What options does the borrower have for repayment from savings, retirement, or other property? What they're looking for is the lender is how much skin in the game does this borrower have when they make this loan? Are they motivated to see a successful conclusion because their loss is going to be with your loss? If there is something that goes wrong, who's going to suffer pain for that? Are they motivated to keep that loan going and keep you paid? So how much skin in the game do they have and what are their motivations? Finally, our sixth C is my own. It's not from the Bank of America website or anybody else, but I want you to look at their character. Is the borrower on the FBI most wanted list or part of the community Rotary Club? How do you know them? How long have you known them? Have you ever seen the referrals from them or having personal relations or understanding of their business or them as an individual? So character is a big part of what you should be looking for. Because there's that old saying about a lot of wealthy people have deep pockets but short arms. Just because they have the ability to pay doesn't mean they're going to. Make sure that they have a good character and can do that for you. If you evaluate each of these six elements and they meet your threshold, great. If not, pass on the deal and move on to the next. Money is a commodity and people will use it. If it's not good for one, somebody else will be next in line. The way wealthy people make money on lending, and you don't have to be wealthy to start, but it'll get you there if you're prudent and do it right. And this is what banks do. They lend in an arbitrage with other people's money. Like I said, the banks do it every day. They take your deposit and pay you a 2% CD rate. Then they lend out your cash for a credit card or an auto loan at, say, 12%. This creates a 10% arbitrage on what they pay you for the money and what they collect. So for $100,000 deposit, the bank will pay the depositor $2,000 for the following year and collect $12,000 from the borrower making the $10,000 on the transaction, and the money's not even theirs. What a sweet idea, huh? Money is a commodity, like I said, and any commodity that you have one buyer and one seller at different levels, and if you can be in the middle and make that difference, that's an arbitrage. And that ability is to do it multiple times as well. Of course, they take the risk. The lender takes the risk for the lack of payment or the cost or any losses that take place. But even if you assume a 3% loss history and maybe even a 3% cost, they still pocketed $4,000 for the year, covering all their costs associated with it, and made a pretty tidy profit. So what if you were to offer your capital to others? Let's say 10% for a mortgage. Sure, that's better than 2% at the bank, but you can still do this over and over again. For example, let's say I lent out $100,000 on a piece of property and they're paying me a 10% rate. Well, I can take that note that they give me for $100,000, I can take it back to the bank and say, I'm going to use this as collateral for a working capital loan, and I'd like that loan to be at prime rate, or let's say it's 5%. So I get, they'll say, okay, I'll give you that $100,000 line of credit, but I'm only going to give you $60,000 line of credit because I want a safety net because you're your asset may not be worth $100,000 if they default or something else. Fine. But now I've got my 100 out there. I've got the bank 60, and I've got the arbitrage working on me. So on that $60,000, I've got it earning $6,000 for the 60, and it's going to cost me, let's say, 5% or $3,000 for the year. So that's how that works, and it works out really well. It's a way to make money on other people's money, and that's the arbitrage. Some of the forms a lender should use or be aware of, I suggest they ask other people that are making loans or seek legal advice on that. It varies depending upon whether you're secured or unsecured and the type of collateral you wish to take. For example, a UCC-1 statement that's on assets like a tree crop. You can borrow against somebody's personal property. It could be the next year's harvest. It could be the fixtures in their store and their inventory. These are all items that you would secure with a UCC-1 statement. So I recommend you talk to your attorney about that. And also talk to them on whether or not you need to be state licensed. If you're doing a significant amount of business and being a lender, you probably will need a license. And I recommend that you get a recommendation on that. Common clauses or features that you'd want to put into your loan agreement. And this is fairly generic, but it's also fairly universal. The venue and the location of any court. So if you have to go to court, where's it going to be? Put that in front, right in your agreement, that it'll be here in Santa Maria. You may lend the guy money and he moves to Seattle. You don't want to go to Seattle to collect it, I promise you. Make sure you have the venue and the courts identified in advance. Who would pay for any collection cost if there's settlement required? Typically, it's the prevailing party. But this is the kind of language that you want in there as well. Number three, what kind of late charges would you charge, when and how much, and where the priority is on their payment? So if they were to make a payment, does it go first to late charges, then to interest, then to principal? You set that priority from the get-go. The other clause that you may want in there is a due on sale or a transfer, making the note either assumable or non-assumable to the next party. Secondarily, you'd have do you want a personal guarantee or a co-borrower requirement? Personal guarantees work out really well if the person's willing to do so, or they may even have a third person guarantee the loan. If you don't like the six C's we talked about, but you would agree to do it if there was a personal guarantee by maybe the person's brother-in-law or a relative, somebody else that would personally guarantee for them, or a co-borrower. These are things that you could put into your contract. Also, we talked a little bit about cross-collateralization. Maybe the asset that they're pledging isn't adequate. Is there something else that you could also attach that would make it more attractive and entice you to make that loan? And then finally, one of the clauses you should have in there is a default rate of interest. So if they miss a payment or if they fail to adhere to the terms of the loan, what happens to the interest rate? Do you still want to have it at 10%? No. If they default, you want to motivate them to get it paid off even sooner, and you have a 16% interest rate, or you hike it up. And there's a penalty for not paying on time and making it difficult for you. You're planning to receive your money at a certain time when they pay it off. If they don't, it's real important that you have a default interest rate in there for that penalty. Always record your mortgage or collateral agreement. So if you get a second trust deed or any kind of trust deed, by all means, go and record that document. What you're doing is setting out public notice that anybody else that were to make that personal loan is going to be behind yours. Okay? So there's a priority system. I worked as a receiver one time for the Superior Court, and there was a scam, a trustee scam going on. And when we got to the bottom of it, they were fleecing investors, taking their money and giving them a trustee. We looked at the priority, and there was one property that had 16 deeds of trust on it. I can tell you, that guy that probably passed number two wasn't going to get anything, even pennies on the dollar. There's no value to that type of trust deed. So you want to make sure it's recorded to prioritize your loan. With different collateral types, you can collateralize real estate, you can a boat, a car, an RV, aircraft, business inventory, all these things you can collateralize and use as collateral for loans. And you'd use different security forms. For example, real estate would be a mortgage, a vehicle would be pink slip, a business inventory would be a UCC-1 statement. So make sure you get the right forms for the right type of collateral. Then finally, you're going to service these loans. I highly recommend that you keep a ledger for each loan showing all receipts and expenses. You're going to need to detail all these and have a reckoning and reconciliation when there's a payoff. I also suggest that you keep separate bank accounts so you're not commingling it with your private money for your home and so forth in the event that there's a disruption. You don't then have to show your personal bank statements to anybody. You just can say that all the capital went to this account, and if they are subpoenaed, that would be all you'd have to show. You also want to keep detailed records for the payments, for payoffs and receipts. So then the next loan is just wash, rinse, and repeat. No problem. And then finally, if you have a note receivable, can you sell it? You bet. You can sell it. That's an asset. You can hypothecate it or even sell it for partial interest. Just do a formal assignment. And you're on your way. There's a million ways to do this. Buying a loan is the same as selling a loan. Just look it over and make sure what the history's been for the payment. You can make a fortune with debt swaps, trading, and investing in loans. So that's the paper side of real estate. If you want to be part of our show and share your questions, comments, go to reloans.com and click or contact the tab. Or call us at 805-686-2321. We'll look forward to seeing you at the next show. I'm your host, David Brown, from High Tech Lending and American Senior Mortgage. Thank you for tuning in to The Credit Connection, where we do the work and you get the credit. This is Dave Brown, wishing you profit and credit worthiness. See you next week.
You've been listening to The Credit Connection with David Brown from High Tech Lending. For more information, contact David Brown directly at 805-686-2321. That's 805-686-2321. Or by email at dbrown@hightechlending.com. dbrown@hightechlending.com. And visit David online at reloans.com. That's reloans.com. And tune in next time for High Tech Lending's David Brown and The Credit Connection here on KSMA.